Hey guys, we're the Hard Time Showman podcast, cheering up a bear class man. And today, we are finally continuing on our Ranger Handbook Abridged series with chapters 4 and 5. And you'll see why we did 2 chapters in 1 episode soon enough.
Today's subject:
communications,
slavery,
and demolitions. What? What do you say?
Today's subject: slavery. Oh, that meme. We decided to throw 2 together, and it's like you said, you will see why. It's my eyes started glossing over when I started reading the communications one. Like, nothing against it, it's very dry.
It took this long because I'm trying to figure out how to even do this episode, and we're just gonna really lean into the abridged part of the Ranger Handbook Abridged thing.
We're gonna Bill O'Reilly this. We're gonna do it live.
Wow,
do it live.
You just hit him with it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Goodness. All right, guys, we're going out of TC3-21.76 Ranger Handbook, Chapter 4, Communications. So many tables and numbers and words.
It's so much.
I'm not even gonna do what I normally do and cut and paste all these images into a separate doc for you guys. I will literally just post
the whole chapter, just
this chapter with my highlights on it, because there are so many tables just full of information, and you guys aren't listening to this so that I can just go through cell by cell on a table. That's not what I'm for. So it will be up on our Patreon. You guys can find it. It'll be free to the public. Anybody can go on there and look at it, download all that stuff. But yeah, I like, this is for you, but we have to enjoy this too to record it. So there you go.
I still want to make a man pack.
Oh, dude, have you seen those on IG?
Yeah.
Like, some of these radio accounts, like, these guys, like, make sick setups. Like, they're freaking slick. Like, I still got to do that. I want to make a SDR out of Raspberry Pi. That would be legit. Mm.
That would be legit.
Because then, like, software-defined radio, if you found a way to get all the different kind of, like, all to set up all the antennas that you need, you can hit every frequency range. Plus SAT, plus, all that stuff. APRS, like, the whole gig. I need to get way more communications and tech savvy before I do it, but that'd be really sick. Same. Because, honestly, that's what I would do, is a Raspberry Pi or something similar, throw that into like a smaller Pelican case, and then just like off wire your controls. So that could literally just sit in your pack or on your belt or whatever. Like, that'd be legit.
Mm-hmm.
Any hoozle. Communications.
Yay.
The basic requirement of combat communications is to provide rapid, reliable, and secure interchange of information. It's comms.
Over
radio rat, guys. That's all.
I loved being an RTO. Being an RTO was so much fun. Anyway.
Yelling at people. Yelling at DLTs. What do you mean you didn't hear me? Basically, retard.
There was an art to calling people an idiot over the radio without actually calling them an idiot.
With radio etiquette, keeping it like to the point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, like, just as a team leader and just like living in the Army for a while, my corporate speak got so good. Because like, if one guy got insecure, he could just screw your life up. So you had to be really good at talking to people. If you had to call them an idiot, you had to make it so they won't hurt their feelings.
No.
because they get sad.
Oh, I didn't care.
But I did. Like, I don't care if you smoke me. Like, I literally had a guy who smoked me all the time, and like and it got to the end where like he was like having to leave. He's like, are you done? I'm like, I thought we had one more set. And he's like, yeah, we do. I'm just like, okay, like I've been smoked before. Like, this doesn't hurt. I don't know. You know, I'm not learning anything here. But
try harder, daddy.
Yeah. Pop me like a glow stick, daddy. Radios vary from high frequency, very high frequency, ultra high frequency, and tactical satellite or TACSAT. We had, and here's our first freaking table right out of the gate. Characteristics the ANPRC 152. We had the 152s, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Handhelds.
Yeah, so we had 152s. The 148s are essentially the same thing. I think they may be a little bit smaller. And then there's the 119F, which is the man pack.
Mm-hmm.
So both of the handhelds can go from low, high, ultra high, TACSAT. The man pack just does low frequency.
Low. Very high frequency. Low.
Pump it out to 10 watts. By golly.
Yeah.
And of course, your handhelds have the rechargeable lithium ion batteries, which, if you don't do it right, will completely zeroize your radio. So have fun figuring that out.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you how to do it because I want to laugh.
You know, all these radios are going to have scanning capabilities. So being able to scan multiple frequencies, AM, FM, and then loading. So the man pack, you're pretty much doing that manually. Yeah. Cause the handhelds, they have the daggers.
Yep.
But man packs, that's on you, boo. And by man pack, we mean, so what, man portable? Is that essentially it's in your backpack. So it's a big radio. You can fit in your backpack. It'll be the same exact thing that you would throw in a truck, essentially, except for it's mobile. So
I carried one of those around, and I don't think those were the 119s, because the radio that I had my back was way, way more capable than those Harris radios were. Or the 152s. Is that the one? Were those Harris's? I think those are Harris's. Well, dude, it's been a minute. Yeah.
I think it's like someone just handed it to me, dude. I don't know. From what I remember, it was a Harris.
Yeah, I think those are Harris's. It's been a minute since we were last in. Was that 2018? So it's been, dude, has it been 6 years? Going on 7? Holy crap.
Well, I think the thing with the man pack is that you just can just touch out so far.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yes, the handhelds have the VHF, UHF, TACSAT, but the man pack, like, you are sitting at VHF low, and you can pump that out, like, up to 10 watts.
Miles.
So, yeah, so I think that was the whole thing with capabilities of those, is just like, I am going to reach somebody, whether it's on this continent or the next one. Like, I will talk to somebody. Can I talk to your manager?
I know it's not listed on there, but I'm pretty sure you can hook up a man pack to a TACSAT antenna.
Granted, this handbook is from 2017, so capabilities might have changed in that time, but with how quickly, what I mean is actually how slowly the MRA rolls new stuff out, I couldn't tell you, dude.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Moving on, handhelds, you're looking at, you know, 2, almost 3 pounds. The Manpack 7.7 pounds without the battery. So, with your combat load and your food and your water and all your missile essentials, like, you're going to be strong. You're going to be so strong.
Let me put you this way. When we were doing our our ruck runs with troop, and everybody was having to do 40-pound minimum. Me, as the RTO, being with weapon squad, my pack was 70 pounds. And I was ruck running 12 miles with that.
You're getting so strong.
That sucked so bad. I eventually found ways around it. Anyway.
Are you done crying?
No.
Well, too sorry, bad. Everything's encrypted.
Anyway.
What else? Special features. So handhelds, you're looking at ship to shore, ground to ground, air to ground capable. You know, like I said, with the man pack, you're tied to whoever the hell you want to. And with all of these, so terrain restrictions, all these line of sight, so open to slightly hilly terrain. Like, you have to be able to have a decent view of what you're trying to talk to. Except for the handhelds, because you have tax that capability. So,
right.
Anytime, and anywhere also, you can go.
With those handhelds, you can also talk to Air Force aircraft. The man packs cannot.
And list of frequencies, which is a lot of numbers that I can't read.
So guys, there's a lot to these tables. Even the chapter runs into how to actually assemble a man pack. It runs through the presets. It'll show you how to load some frequencies, how to scan, how to clear the frequencies. So we're just going to, you can read that on your own. Us running through that, it's just going to be super dry and we're going to lose some listeners. So we're just going to jump to some basic trick shooting. So checking your radio settings, you're going to want to load the proper frequency, obviously. Make sure that your power output is set to high and that your radio is, unsurprisingly, in the on position. You would not...
Is the radio on?
Is it on, LT? Is it on? Oh, it's not? Okay, sir. Please leave.
Did you zeroize the radio the 2 minutes that I wasn't looking at your radio?
The answer is yes.
What did you touch? You
freaking did.
Whatever you touch, stop it.
Freaking did. I didn't touch anything. Yes, you did, sir. Shut up. So, checking your radio assembly and battery, you're going to make sure that the antenna is fitting. You're going to be attaching a long whip or a field expedient antenna. I kind of prefer the long whip. I don't know, just me. On my kit, I do have a very long winding rated antenna that runs basically through my kit. So that's on that. But I mean, for everything else, just give me a whip antenna. They're super easy to deal with. Although they do have a problem breaking. If you've got a hand mic, check the fitting on there. Make sure the contacts are clean and they're fitting properly, so they're secured to the radio. I mean, when you're doing that stuff, the best way to check that is to spit on it, clean it off, and then spit on it again and screw it in. That'll definitely get the... That's what we did, and it's so ridiculous. Next, check battery. If it's dead, put a new one in. But please, for the love of freaking God, do not zeroize your radio in the process of changing the battery. There is a right and wrong way of doing it in most cases, and it seems like people just do the wrong way every single time. It's very frustrating. As always, with line of sight radios, if you're having a problem getting your transmission out, move to higher ground. Doing so is probably necessary in order to make radio contact, especially in densely vegetated or uneven terrain. All right, so talking about antennas, I mentioned whip and wire antennas earlier. So when a whip antenna breaks into two, you're going to want to connect the broken part to the part attached to the base by joining the sections. If you're going to restore the antenna to its original length, you're going to want to add a piece of wire that's nearly the same length as the missing part of the whip. I said that these things have a tendency to break. This is what I mean. They will snap where they bend. It's only a matter of time if you have a whip antenna that's going to do that. Sorry to break to you, but it's going to happen. Wire antennas, not so much. If you do need to do an emergency repair of wire antenna, it's probably going to involve the repair or replacement of the wire used as the antenna or the transmission line. And depending on the length of your wire antenna, that may be a sizable chunk of wire, which you're almost better off just carrying a spare or having a whip antenna as a spare. So when one or more of the wires of your antenna are broken, you can repair it by reconnecting those broken ends if you have the proper equipment, and it'll work. It may not be the greatest, but it'll work. To do this, you're going to want to lower to the ground, clean the ends of the wires, and then twist them together. It's an expedient way of doing it. You're going to want to solder them. That's your best way of doing it, just because the connection's not great when you just twist them together. If your antenna is receiving damage beyond repair, construct a new one. Make sure that the length of the substitute antenna wires are the same length as those of the original. If the radiating element is not properly insulated, then the field antenna can short to the ground and no longer work. So just think about the insulation of those. Anything that's not conductive, plastic spoons, buttons, bottlenecks, plastic bags, those are all good insulators. Wood and rope, not as effective, but if you're in a pinch, they'll work. Radiating element, the antenna wire, should only touch the supporting insulator, so as long as it's non-conductive, and also the antenna terminal. It really needs to remain physically separated from quite literally everything else. I know it's kind of dry, but I feel like above all else, being able to repair an antenna is definitely needed. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have ran through all that. So if you're going to construct, adjust, repair an antenna, the best wire for antennas is going to be copper or aluminum. Although in a pinch, you can use any wire that you can find. The exact length of most antennas is critical. You got to make sure that the emergency antenna is the same length as the original antenna. It's completely necessary based off your setup. If you're going to use a improvised antenna, you're going to want to be aware that doing so may change the performance of your radio set, and a distant station may be used to test the antenna just to see if the capabilities are the same as, say, you using an actual wire antenna. This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their Firestarters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S., wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time. They're basically dummy proof.
and help you out. Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strongmen Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
And the Expedient 292 type antenna is an Expedient version, or the Expedient version, can be constructed using any insulated wire and other available material. It goes through how to construct this antenna. Long and short of it, once this is constructed, you attach a rope to the insulator on the free end of the radiating element, toss the rope over the branch of a tree, pull the antenna as high as possible, keeping the leading rod down through the triangle, secure the rope to the antenna holding it in place. Also has a picture of this. It is a thing of engineering. Tell you that right now. Like, and this is what's cool to me. Like, I don't understand all this, obviously, but the fact that this works, and the fact that this works consistently enough that we could throw this in an FM and guys can replicate this, is amazing to me. Just the math, the science that goes into communications is freaking astounding. So in the picture, you have your man pack grounded, like with a stake, into the ground, attached via your radio wire to what essentially breaks down into a pyramid. So you make a triangle with sticks or whatever. These radio wires form up into a pyramid with insulators, and you just haul that as high as you can. And this is used, you know, like in jungle communications. Like, it's amazing to me. It's so freaking cool.
Yeah, those sticks are used to space out the wires to create the
antenna. Right. But that's what I'm saying. It's just like the spacing and the angle, like, but the fact that that works is just so freaking cool. Like, it seems like magic to me.
Wild. Yeah. I mean, never learned how to do that, but that's, because looking at this, I'm just like, what kind of janky crap is this? It's like, just get a freaking actual antenna. This is ridiculous, but I've seen.
But like, that's the thing. Like, that's just making an antenna. So like, there's a table here, quick reference table. So operating frequency in megahertz to element length. And it's like, they have it down to a science. So if your megahertz, if you want to operate in the 40 megahertz range, you need to have 5'10" of radiating element. Like, and they just, like, just the science of this is freaking amazing to me. Like, radio nerds are so freaking cool.
They're so smart, dude.
Well, and just, like, if you get into all these, like, these hobby pages on Instagram or YouTube or whatever, you have these old ham guys who are bouncing railways off the freaking atmosphere to talk to somebody on a different continent on a Tuesday. And like, that's just what they do. Like, it's insanity to me. Like, I saw a guy with a handheld talking to the ISS.
That's wild.
In his front yard, chilling. Like, yeah, amazing. But antenna length per lane consideration. So at a minimum, a quarter of the frequency wavelength. So fourth of the frequency wavelength should be used as the length of the field expedient antenna. The higher in the antenna, the greater the range the radio transmitter has. So it's, you know, launch that sucker, get as high as you possibly can. You know, obviously try to get above the tree line. That'll help out. But terrain and curvature of the freaking earth affect line of sight communication by absorbing VHF, so very high frequency and ultra high frequency communications, into the earth's surface. This is overcome by increasing antenna height, power output, and radio frequency. Once again,
Suck on that, flat earthers.
Yeah, Ranger Hamburg says suck it. A lot of tables, a lot of numbers. and such.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Here I am. Formula to compute the highly anticipated constant for the curvature of the Earth. It's just bonkers to me.
Just
and that's how that chapter ends. A lot of math, law tables. A lot of stuff that's way over my head.
Yeah. I mean, dude, they're pulling out square roots. And yeah, that's... Whew. I'm good. So anyway.
It's not for me.
Chapter 5. Yeah, not for me. Chapter 5, Demolitions. Let's get into the fun stuff.
I wish we had Critter here. It'd be a good episode for him. We should have thought of that.
Get him on the horn.
All right, call him up. Say, hey, you're not busy, right?
Critter, what are you doing, bro?
But start off, characteristics of explosive low and high initiation systems, modernized demolition initiator, or MDI, components. Detonation system, safety considerations, expedient explosive breaching charges, and timber cutting charges. Which we actually talked with Greer about last time. So, here for that. But, in general, low explosives, velocity up to 1,300 feet per second, which produces a pushing or shoving effect. High explosives have a detonating velocity of 3,280 to 27,888 feet per second, which produces a shattering effect. So it depends on what kind of night you want to have.
Depends
once
on
again,
the audio you give me.
Gosh. Once again, big, big table, big, big words, big, big numbers.
Ooh.
Cool names like ammonium nitrate, PETN, RDX, tetrol, nitroglycerin, black powder, composition H6. M1 diamide, dead cord, all the fun things. Water resistance, refractor, fume toxicity, applications, whole shebang.
I really want some dead cord, not gonna lie.
Dead cord, I need to figure out how to source that or make it. Ammonium nitrate, very easy to get, honestly. Very easy to get. It's kind of it's kind of scary how you can go into Home Depot and have it.
It's a gardening thing. Yeah. Like, a bag of ammonium nitrate is used for gardening and also cratering. Also,
I was going to say, also has a cratering charge. How about that?
Hmm.
And the next two systems, or the next two sections, rather, guys, are initiating priming systems and the detonation firing system. So MDIs, well, timed out MDIs, shock tube. This is hyper specific stuff. Some cliff notes, you know, be aware of, you know, static electricity. Don't yank on, you know, deck cord or shock cord. Handle any misfires downrange. Do not handle any misfires downrange. Be a safe distance away. Never yank or pull on stuff. And, you know, wear safety equipment. It'll be in the document. Moving on. Expedient explosives. So these are improvised shape charges, plier charges, and grapeshot. Grapeshot charge. God, hey, I love how history never changes. Everyone at some point is just like, golly, I just really want to throw some forks in a barrel and see what happens.
No, you don't.
Improvised shape charge. So concentrates the energy of the explosion released into a small area, so making a tubular or linear fracture in the target. So this is especially effective against, you know, targets like concrete or armor plating. God, do you remember that class before we deployed when they brought us out to that to like that history range where they had like shape charges out of freaking like Coke cans, and they're like, by the way, this will like totally wreck your life.
Yeah.
And then you just never trusted garbage after that. Anyway, bowls, funnels, cone shaped glasses. So like champagne glasses with the stems cut off are all used as cones.
So that brings us to the fun little device called the platter charge. basically one of these devices turns a metal plate into a powerful blunt-nose projectile. Basically turns it into a freaking metal beanbag round. The plate should be steel, preferably round. Square can work. And weigh anywhere from 2 to 6 pounds.
Call to the and beanbag round. You're talking about a freaking metal plate just getting punted at you.
Yeah. Hell of a beanbag round. Yeah, the weight of the explosive should equal the weight of the platter. That's obvious. Equal and opposite reaction, right?
With that, make sure that it's evenly applied behind the plate.
Yes. Yeah, you do not want like a weird shape behind that.
I was going to say equal and opposite reactions happen. So we hate for that thing to go zing off in the wrong direction.
Yep.
God, can you imagine like Sampa's freaking platter charger than just like pink misting somebody a few miles away? Like they don't even know what freaking happened.
No, that, golly, that metal will hit terminal velocity and it's not going to do that. No, it's interesting reading this because now I know what standoff distance is. Because I remember reading that further up and I'm like, what the hell is standoff distance?
You knew that. You knew that from when we got Claymore training.
So, fun fact, in basic training, I had cellulitis in my knee and was on bed rest, so I actually missed the Claymore training.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah.
So it's not that bad.
Yeah. And the funny part was, you know, at the end of the year, like the drill sergeant select two people to go like go do like the skills challenge or whatever to show what was learned. I got selected to do that. And I had to do the Claymore thing and I had no idea what the hell I was doing. None. That was
it's literally just like Call of Duty. It's not that bad.
It is, but it isn't. They want you to do it like by the book. So like you're skull dragging all the way out there. To set it up.
Entire way.
And then skull dragging all the way back while running the line. Dude, it was so stupid. The priming, the testing, and then actually like setting it off. Obviously, it wasn't a real one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So stupid. Anyway, yeah, this platter charge is kind of cool.
You've only packed the explosive behind your platter, tape it to the anchor if you need to, and then you're priming the charge at the exact rear center of whatever your charge is. Aiming your charge directly at the center of the target, ensuring the charge is on the opposite side of the platter from the target.
So platter charges can also be used as anti-personnel fragmentation mine or a grape shot charge. It is a shotgun round. This is awesome. So to do this, you create a hole in the center, bottom of the container for the plastic cap, put explosive evenly on the bottom of the container, remove all voids and air pockets by pressing the C4 into place using a non-sparking instrument. Yeah, that's probably smart. Place buffer material directly over the top of the explosives. Place projectiles over the top of the buffer materials, then cover to prevent spilling from movement. Aim at the target for approximately... You made a claymore. That's what you did. You made a freaking claymore.
And you laughed at me for talking about putting forks in it. That's literally all you're doing.
Basically,
yeah, this will do it.
Aim at the target from approximately 100 feet. Jesus. That is.
Yeah, explosives are cool. Ugh, what crazy. A
life. I love this. Right.
And we also go into demolition knots and minimum safe distances. So several knots are used for demolitions. All these knots are for joint demolitions to a detonation cord. So Yuli knot, double overhand, square knot, triple roll knot.
Dude, a lot of these are used in fishing too. That's the crazy part. All right. Yeah.
Right? So many applications.
So little time.
And then going on to minimal safe distances for personnel in the open. Going based off, you know, pounds of the explosive to safe distance in feet or meters. So if you have 40 pounds of explosives, minimal safe distance is 342 meters. 300 pounds of explosives, you're looking at 670 meters as your safe distance.
How
I just remember eyeballing it. They'd be like, yeah, this should be good enough. Y'all should be fine.
Yeah, I wonder how much explosive weight is in a 155 shell.
We have the table somewhere. I think we posted on the IG.
Yeah, somewhere.
If not, it was in one of the other episodes. It's in there.
Yeah. So it also gives the minimum safe distance for charges over 500 pounds. That's exactly what we needed. All right, let's talk about some charges.
Breaching
charges. Clear.
Breaching charges are used to break down barriers. You can use breach charges for reinforced concrete, materials other than reinforced concrete, and timber cutting charges.
So, fun fact about breaching charges, they don't just break down barriers, they send them flying across the room. I have seen where
whatever's
dudes,
behind that.
I was about to say that. I have seen where dudes have blown metal doors off their hinges and killed two people with the door.
Yeah. Well, like, so what you said, equal and opposite reaction. Like, the force has to go somewhere.
It has to.
The wall isn't just going to eat it. Like, it's going. And if you're behind it, you're going to.
Yeah. It's not just going to create a hole, and like the debris from whatever made that wall that you just blew up is not just going to evaporate. It's going to become shrapnel.
Well, and so this is what we should have talked about with safe distances. We kind of did a disservice there. But safe distance is for a freaking reason. Are not even talking about shrapnel. The concussive force.
Oh my God, yes.
So your skin might be fine, right? Your internal organs, not so much. So there's a limit. I think it's a limit of three or five times that you can shoot the Carl Gustav at a time. Otherwise, you get messed up.
I think
it's three.
Well, this like the same goes for the 50 cal.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
That explains a lot. I think it is a maximum of five rounds at a given time. I don't know, dude. I watched some weapons documentary and they were talking about it. Like,
Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Like,
yeah.
I never knew that about the 50. I remember when I was training with the team dudes on the Carl Gustav, they're like, yeah, you can't shoot this anymore. So I was like, why? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's why. It's like, that's not a good feeling. Oh, no. Dude. And well, then you read like the freaking like Mel von Resuvius, who just like freaking were laying on that thing. It's like, golly, dude, your insides.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
But anyways, that's why we're talking about safe distances, because literally your insides aren't meant to take that kind of force. So the shockwave, it does things. Same reason why, like, when you see like huge explosions, like, you know, gossip videos or, you know, whatever, like off in the distance, and then like you see that shockwave coming, it just shatters all the glass, people start screaming. That's why.
That's
it's not good vibes. Yeah, it's not good vibes. But once again, another table for these breaching charges, you know, how literally how many feet of concrete, you know, how much explosive will, how many packages of explosive will take to defeat however many feet of concrete.
So it's also on here, after you dig through all these tables, you can get to figure 5.8, which is the formula for computing size of charge to breach concrete, masonry, and rock. So we're going to talk about an abatis. Abatis is an obstacle formed by felled trees that impedes the enemy's ability to advance on an avenue of approach. This is so easy to make. So super easy to make. You just cut down a tree, but you leave it attached to the stump, because the stump's an anchor. The thing after this, it's a table talking about timber cutting charge size. So you have your internal charge, your external charge, and your abatis charge. And it tells you how many packages of C4 are required in 1.25 pound packages. And it also sorts it by timber. It also sorts it by timber diameter in inches. So,
we talked about this with Critter before, and abatis, it is a
cutting
obstacle
charge.
So the abatis, it's an obstacle using interlocking felled trees. So below this, you have a visual representation. it's disgusting. Oh, there it is. Imagine dominoes. So interlacing trees. And like you said, they're all still attached to the trunk. You just blew them up and felled them. And just trying to unravel that crap that you just made is such a pain. It is such a time suck. And that's why it's such a good obstacle.
It's so easy to do, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. And there's a couple other pictures. So showing how to wrap your decor around the tree for the right direction of travel. Oh, here's one. How to actually... So if you're not using decor, if you're actually using sticks of explosive or C4, TNT, whatever, how to drill out in the trunk to insert the explosive to get to where you need to go. Yeah. A lot of fun stuff. But that was it for Ranger Handbook chapters 4 and 5. Like we said at the very beginning, so sorry, guys. Hell of a lot of pictures, hell of a lot of tables, numbers, equations, all that stuff. So for this, it won't be like a typical episode where we put in just the images for the episode on the Patreon. We will upload our show notes, which is literally just the Ranger Handbook with parts that we highlighted, just these two chapters. So you guys can read this at your leisure. And you'll actually be able to see what we were looking at as we were talking about it. But, Sixty, do you have anything else?
Explosives are fun. I don't fully understand them, but they're fun.
I second that. Guys, we're the Hard Time Strongman Podcast. Cheering for a bear class of man. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. And don't blow off your fingers.
Or do.
Or do.
You do you.
I don't care. Check out our Discord, where we talk about all of the topics that we talk about in our conversations, but in deep dive format. We have a lot of members on there of varying skill sets, of varying proficiencies, all talking about all these topics, sharing their experiences. So join today and help us expand our knowledge base.
And check out our Patreon outside of just backing up all of our episodes for when we eventually get canceled. Our patrons get access to our exclusive episodes, our pre-shows, our post-shows, our little tidbits here and there that we aren't really supposed to talk about. We're also opening up all of these exclusive episodes for people to individually purchase. So you don't have to get tied into a tier in order to get all that content. You can dip your toes in a little bit, decide you like it, then come and join us on that. We're having exclusive conversations, and along with the Discord, we are just building that community, building that skill set, that mastery, these proficiencies. And this, outside of our sponsor, is what's keeping the lights on and keeping all of this information, all these classes rolling for you guys. So make sure to check our Patreon. And one last thing, guys, the world is better with you in it. If you're feeling suicidal or if you're in crisis, dial 988 or reach out at 988lifeline.org to get help. Someone's always on the line. So if you need a lifeline, remember 988. Stay in the fight.
Stay the fight.